In this episode of Sunday Morning Linux Review, I'll be taking a look at Michael W. Lucas's new book, FreeBSD Mastery: Storage Essentials. And I'll also be I've also put together an episode, or not an episode actually, but a new set of Is It Alive questions. So we'll be running an Is It Alive. So I guess we'll find out whether I think Matt won the last one, didn't he? I believe you did.
I think we tied last time.
Yeah, we tied. So we're going to see if, in the spirit of brotherly love, that tie continues in this episode.
And about halfway through, I have a very important announcement. So listen in.
So will Matt unveil his new Bash Junkie site? Or will we be jilted at the altar once again?
The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talley, Tony Venus, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 141.
Spiked eggnog.
Isn't that a little redundant? Because even when I was a child, the only eggnog I ever had had rum in it.
The first time I had eggnog was spiked.
Yeah, so the really? So I've only ever known eggnog as a liquor drink.
Yeah.
Oh, not me.
Really?
Yeah. Well, but you haven't heard why we're doing this.
Okay.
Okay, because, you know, Fedora 21, which of course...
is now old enough to drink.
Yeah, that's right. And Christmas is coming, so that's why we kind of... Threw that together.
Right. Our next show is going to be after Christmas. So.
Yeah. So.
Oh.
So this is our holiday edition of Sunday Morning Linux Review. We don't have our hats on. I didn't even
No hats.
Mine's packed away because I'm getting ready to move. And,
I have no idea where mine is.
I have to go dig through my stuff.
I think I took it back, didn't I? Didn't I lend the hats off?
You might have the hat.
I have it in my prop room. My prop room at home. It's, you would not believe the stuff I got in there. Oh my gosh. But anyway, Tony, it's about you right now. So tell us about your move.
Well, we haven't closed on the house yet. But we're supposed to close this Friday.
Excellent.
So by the time we talk next, we will be, in the middle of moving and cleaning and.
Wow.
My wife told me.
You're gonna have a month overlap there?
I prefer not to, because we can save $800 if we don't. But we'll see how it goes.
Whenever I moved places, I always got a month overlap.
Yeah.
Yeah, we paid the rent two places.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so my wife told me last night that one of the first things she wants to do, like before refinishing the floors.
Is to get this new studio set up?
No, she wants to put Christmas lights up at the new house.
Oh, that's nice.
And yeah, I think it's fun. And if we close on Friday, will be the 18th. And we'll be out there on the 19th or the 20th or somewhere in that range. So preferably, a few days before Christmas, we'll be putting Christmas lights up at the new house.
And so where will we be recording then? Over there?
No, it'll be back here.
Okay.
At least the 28th is our next record day.
So everyone will be having a new backdrop after next episode.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll have to see.
I have a
flag. Depends if we go with my plan or go with Matt's plan.
What's my plan?
The month overlap.
Oh, yes.
So maybe three more shows in this place.
Oh, okay. Well.
Depends.
I'm flexible.
All right.
So, all right. Well, good. That's good to hear. So, and I know that, I think on the last show we talked about going to the mug meeting. Michigan User Group, the Linux, or excuse me, the Unix Linux User Group.
It's just called, Michigan User Group, because it predates Linux.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was really Unix.
It was at the time it was a computer users group.
Yeah.
And and
there wasn't much there. Yeah, Unix and Windows 1.0 or something.
Yeah. Well, what year? 1985.
I was going to say 84. I couldn't remember, but yeah.
But I'll try that again. Michael W. Lucas was there, and he spoke about his, what did he speak about?
Sudo,
right?
Yeah.
And he had his book available, and I read, actually I purchased and downloaded his ebook, and we'll be reviewing it during this episode instead of doing a distro review. I just didn't have time to do a distro review and do a book review. There are just limits to what I can do.
We'll forgive you, Mary.
All right, thank you very much.
You know, and I got a free book from him, the SSH Mastery. So I promised I would do a half book review for him.
He did. Tony won one of the door prizes at the meeting. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So yeah,
it's right here. SSH Mastery.
Yeah.
Excellent book. I own it.
I do too. I own the ebook, even though I hate ebooks.
I own the paper version because I like paper versions and don't like ebooks.
I know. I'm just gonna. Okay. All right. So that's kind of what I did. And then did I talk about upgrading? There was apparently, on the PCBSD forums, or at least in the blog on their site, there was some kind of an issue with the upgrade.
With resume.
Yeah.
Suspend resume. So. With the AMD chipset.
Yep. And so what they're, apparently they are, kind of retooling their updater. So I'll be interested to see how that looks once I get that taken care of.
Yeah.
So.
And I read that they had a problem with suspend resume in this release on AMD chipsets, and that they also had a heat issue with AMD chipsets.
Hmm. Laptops were dripping off the. Yeah, I don't have I got Intel, so.
So you were fine.
I was safe. Yeah, because I never really noticed those problems. So and that obviously is why. So. Anyway, so Matt, Big Matt, Matt, we're going to be spending Sunday together.
Yes,
party
we
Sunday,
are.
Because we're going to the...
Actually, probably most of today, cutting the show and then the football game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we're going to go see the Vikings beat the Lions.
Hey, by the way, too, on my team call this past Friday, we do it every other week, so this week, this Friday's was the last call. I'm going to give a shout-out to my coworkers because I mentioned that I do this podcast. I don't think any of them will be listening, but I'm shouting out anyway. But, of course, many of them are based out of Eagan, Minnesota. And, of course, they're Viking fans. So I told them I kind of trash talk a little bit. And then I told them that if the Lions lose, that they can take solace in the fact that I'll be trash talked right back by you right after the game ends.
That's right.
So anyway, but yeah. So yeah, we're going to, yeah, it'll be kind of fun. Hey, let's do a selfie at the game.
Especially, hey, one of the guys at work, he's actually buying season tickets with his dad next year.
Is he?
And yeah, he's a huge Lions fan.
Okay.
And he goes to a lot of the games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember where it was we ate last time,
mm-hmm.
but he recommended that we go that we eat at Slo's and get the pulled pork sandwich.
Well, if we do that, then we have to get club seats.
Really?
Yeah. And that's an annoying thing. Well, the Lions.
Wow, because then he must get club seats because he eats at the Slo's.
Really? I'm
going to
find out. I'll find out.
He said it was on the concourse, I thought.
Yeah, it is. It's up one level. But I think that they check, and I sat in those club seats for that Buffalo game, that free game. And it was not bad, but anyway, we'll have to find out. We'll check it out today.
All right.
Okay. I will not be eating barbecue pork because I don't really eat much meat at all.
He said the pulled pork sandwich with the coleslaw was the bomb.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, Slo's is really good. So, if you're into that kind of thing. All right.
And who isn't into good pulled pork?
Me.
Oh, man, I love pulled pork.
Okay.
I'll let you know how it is.
All right. This is the carnivore. The carnivore segment. Okay, well, I guess we'll, what else we get to talk about before we start to move into the major segments? Anything else?
I guess that's it.
All right.
I got nothing.
All right.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
And the Colonel News.
News.
It's still listed as the main line on their website, but it's actually the latest stable Colonel, 3.18. And then the latest, and it was released on 12.7. And then the latest stable kernel that they have listed is 3.17.6, released also on 12.7. And then long-term kernel 3.14.26, released on 12.6. Long-term kernel 3.12.35, released on 12.10. Long-term kernel 3.10.62, released on 12.6. Long-term kernel 3.4.105, released on 12.1. and then the long-term kernel 2.6.32.65, released on 12.13. So that means all you guys out there running Red Hat Enterprise or CentOS, Scientific mm-hmm. Linux, you've got a new kernel coming. Doesn't happen very often. Anyway, that's the kernel news.
All right. And by the way, too, and maybe it's, I don't know if it's resolved by now, but that 3.18 kernel was released with some little lockup situation that they hadn't completely resolved, but apparently doesn't affect a lot of people. So I guess Linus Torvalds decided to release with it there rather than delay because he said...
it won't be fixed until there's a 3.18.1, Mary, because that's the way release cycles work.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, thanks for updating us on the kernel, Matt.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
Distros this week. Bi-week.
Last episode.
That's right. So last episode was on the 30th. So we're going to start off on the 1st today. And so December 1st, 2014 was released Manjaro Linux 0.8.11. That's their latest Arch-based desktop distro with XFCE and KDE as their desktops.
Yeah, and actually they're turning their attention to KDE Plasma 5, and they said that they've got early development testing images already available for it if you want to go out to their site.
Hmm.
And they've got Steam now is provided with two launcher choices, one for the native system libraries and one for using the Steam compatibility libraries. And then also, this is kind of interesting. Are you guys familiar with OpenRC?
It's a
dependency. You're giving me that look, Matt. You're just giving me a hard time. It's a dependency-based init system that works with the system provided in a program, normally SBIN init, which I think we all know about. Now, apparently...
Long live init.
What's that?
Nothing.
Okay. But they are, apparently they're using that, and it's not a replacement for SBIN init, but it was developed by the Gen 2 project that can be used by other Linux distros as well as FreeBSD. So.
And also, this edition, they switched to the LightDM login manager for display locking and user switching, which includes a custom integration for XFCE.
Yeah, and they went with this OpenRC because they wanted to give people choice with that systemd coming in. They just thought, you know, you're going to have a choice. And they said, you don't see that too often in Linux as far as you're being able to choose your init.
Because there's a lot of core to the whole operating system.
So apparently that's
what Debian forked over it.
Yeah.
We now have Dev1.
Did it come to fruition? I remember we talked about it a little bit last week, but.
Well, I mean, they have announced that they're forking. I mean, it takes a long time, especially with a project as large as Debian. It'll take a long time to actually
just do a DD.
No. Yeah. To actually get the fork going, but they're determined to fork it.
Can you just say CP to Dev1 and
you could, but they
want to get the developers lined up and the
I'm just messing, and the
managers of the various projects. And,
All right, so next up we have on the second is Linux Lite 2.2, which is updated because it's a 2.2, and it's based on Ubuntu 14.04 LTS.
Yeah, you know, this particular release, they apparently they had included Mumble in their distro, and for whatever reason they've dropped it, and also they've gone over that threshold where it can no longer fit on a CD. So they discussed it with the community, and apparently everybody says, that's all right because it's going to have more stuff on it, so you can go to DVD, or they supported it. So,
What choice didn't they make? Cut the desktop. cut the productivity suite.
They did not make that choice.
So,
So they must be a full-fledged distro.
They are.
In that world.
Distro.
All right.
In the real world.
That's right.
And also, they added backups, a very simple to use backup utility to this release.
All right. On the 4th, we have Antex 14.3 MX, And they are MEPIS-based, right?
Yeah.
Antex is a flavor developed in collaboration with MEPIS community for featuring XFCE as their desktop.
You know, speaking of MEPIS, did you, if you take a look at the list of the 100 most, well, at least as far as clicks goes, on the right side of the DistroWatch homepage, MEPIS, at least yesterday, was down at like 100.
I see that.
I have never seen it that low. And
MEPIS was all the way down at 100?
Yeah, it's almost as if that project is sort of on hiatus and the energy now is put into things like Antix.
Well, they're completely different project leads. This is, I can't remember, but it's two totally different project leads. Mm-hmm. They're completely separated. They just based themselves on the MEPIS.
But one thing about Antix, which is kind of nice, is if you've got older hardware, this is a viable option.
It's a very nice option.
All you need, they've got the recommended minimum for RAM is 128 megabytes, and then the installer only needs 2.2 gigs on the hard drive. So, and they also claim, and I have not tested it, but they claim that it can be used as a fast booting rescue CD. So, certainly yes. Fast booting
and
if it's got
this
those
version includes a rock solid System D free experience for those that would prefer to stick with SysV in it. The MX14 series will be supported through the end of life of Debian Wheezy, which is still SysV in it.
All right. There you go. Next up.
Next we have Makalulu Linux. I can never say it right.
Always throwing that extra A in there, Tony.
I didn't this time. Makalulu.
Yeah, Makalulu has an extra A in it.
M-A-K-U. Moke.
Moke.
Yeah, but you said Maka.
I said Makalulu.
Yeah, that's
how you did. Oh my gosh. All right, just
7.0.
Okay. I like
and
how you ended
on.
That. He ended strongly. Start out a little lame, right. But you really got there. You finished it. All right, yeah, Makalulu.
Makalulu. Okay.
Yeah, just kind of divide it into two letter syllables. Makalulu.
All right. And this is the XFCE edition, obviously based on XFCE with Ubuntu as their base distro.
They changed. This is the first release for Makalulu, or Makalulu. I'm sorry, Tony, I'm teasing you. This is the first release where we're not based on Debian. And in the release notes, he kind of goes into a little bit of detail about that. They decided, I think there was some push from the community, and for a while he had just kind of ignored it. But apparently it was persistent enough that he finally said, you know what, I'm doing it, and actually it's not so bad. So, yeah, so now it's based on Ubuntu long-term support series. A couple other things, too, is they've got a couple of gaming platforms on their Steam, and Play on Linux are both included. And then these guys, I think we've talked about this. I think it's Kingsoft Office, which it used to be called Kingsoft. It's now called WPS. It's that Office suite.
Kingsoft changed their name?
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of interesting because I think WPS is the extension for WordPerfect.
It is.
Document. So that was kind of interesting. And another thing, too, is that they ended up, it says it was a hard choice to choose between Firefox and Chrome, but it needed to keep the ISO small. So Firefox came in a little less than Chrome did, so they didn't include Chrome in this release. And he's thinking of moving because he's based out of, I want to say Indonesia or someplace in Southeast Asia. And he says it's just kind of tough to, with the internet connections and all of that. So he's in the process of looking at options to move so he can be in a location where he's got more reliable internet.
Tell him not to go to Australia.
Okay. All right. I donated a little money to his little campaign to move just because, you know. And oh, one last thing. He's the one that does these over the top, and when I say over the top, they're just really lengthy, descriptions and release notes. He said here, for the speed, they went from, taking, I think, as far as the, installation taking about 40 to 60 minutes, that it now takes, about 5, I think.
Wow.
He says, this edition will make you foam at the mouth with raw speed. So anyway, that kind of cracked me up.
All right. That is funny.
Yes.
Mary took the only thing I was going to mention.
foaming at the mouth?
No, they switched from Debian to Ubuntu.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right.
This was the first really, well, never mind. I already said it.
We already covered it.
All right. On the 8th, we have Sparky Linux 3.6 with their LXDE and Mate, Razer QT, and XFCE editions. And they are still based on Debian with all those desktops that I just mentioned.
They are still based on it. I was going to mention that they've got this Sparky, they got this little utility, a meta package, SystemD UI, which apparently gives you access to SystemD settings as root so that you can make adjustments.
Woohoo. They've also, on this version, replaced the Hot Tot Twitter microblogging client with Terpiel. So if you're a Twitterite, they have replaced Hot Tot with Terpiel.
Okay.
And their code name is Anangerman. You see that?
No.
It's Anangerman.
Yeah.
Anangerman. I have no clue what that means.
I don't know either. I didn't look it up, and usually I do that.
I think it's a man that anangers.
Angers? Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Like anager kind of is like anagram.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of wondering about.
I don't think it's English.
All right. Anyway, next up on the 9th, we have Porteus 3.1, and they are lightweight based on Slackware. And they're still on a CD with KDE, LXQT, Mate, and XFCE as their desktops.
Mm-hmm. And you can still download a 32-bit version of this distro. And although DistroWatch didn't really talk too much about it, they've got it. They also released their kiosk edition, and they've got Firefox, or they're actually using the extended support version, ESR channel.
Oh.
Which apparently, commercial enterprises and governments and things use because it's long-term
for
support.
Firefox,
and it's more,
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's more stable. So, they also got, support for Wake on LAN, which, allows PCs to be powered up remotely, which I find that very interesting that you can power up a PC remotely.
Yeah, it's a feature in the network card that whenever it gets across the network, when it gets the magic packet,
ping, yeah. The magic ping packet,
then it knows to turn on the PC.
Wow, yeah. I wasn't even aware of that.
It's been a feature for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they added it in this particular release. And they're saying that, it's the first...
I thought it was a feature of the card.
Yeah.
Well, they added support for it. So if your card has it, then you're going to be able to do it here.
Maybe you can easily turn it on and off from the OS now or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, this is in the kiosk version. So if you're managing them from a central spot, they're saying that this is kind of another step along that journey.
The server side now has the option to say turn that on.
Yeah, so if you're kiosk.
You can obviously shut it down easily by SSHing in and shutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you turn it back on?
That's right. Uh-huh, that's nice.
So that's what they've got available. And also they said that the UEFI component has been officially approved. So if your PC is shipped with that firmware, then download the UEFI version of the ISO. So they've got that available. Go ahead.
They also went to kernel 3.17.4 in this version. And they've added the fact that you must now type OK before they overwrite your existing MVR. So I guess there must have been issues.
Yeah.
I can remember the days when I think I DD'd, how you kind of copy it out.
Yes.
And I can remember setting that up, that command, little command up, and being very,
eight times.
And it's nice to have a backup of it in case you trash it. But, boy, I tell you, you mess with that and, you're
pretty much hosed.
You are. Your files are out there, but you lost the map.
Exactly.
Oh, and one other thing about, we're really showing Porteus the love today, aren't we? One other thing too is, to add some additional flexibility, they've added an option to their wizard which allows you to switch between the BIOS and UEFI variants when you're installing. So if you don't happen to know what you've got on your system, they're giving you that flexibility. So I think that's pretty cool.
All right. Next up we have, also on the 9th, is FreeNAS 9.3.
That's right. It's one of the BSD releases.
That's right. Yeah, it uses FreeBSD as the operating system. It's a, from everything I've heard, it's an awesome network attached storage server setup.
It very much is.
Yeah, with ButterFS, right? Or no, what's FS?
ZFS.
ZFS.
Yes.
It has a lot of features that are really nice. What, dedupe and... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Michael, this is a new book.
What's that?
FreeBSD Storage Mastery.
Ah.
Or FreeBSD Mastery Storage Essentials.
Whatever. FreeBSD and storage and mastery in it.
That's right. And that's right. And I'll be talking about it in a little bit. But one, a couple of other things. Jordan Hubbard sent out the release announcement. Now you're probably wondering, well, what's that all about? Well, actually, Jordan Hubbard was part of the team that, that worked on the initial FreeBSD project. He then left and went to Apple for 12 years. Worked at Apple and just left Apple a year ago, I think last August, and now is at IX Systems, who uses FreeNAS in their storage servers that they sell. Mm. So he's returned to the
IX Systems. They're a really big supporter of the FreeBSD and the FreeBSD community.
They are.
A lot of the kernel, the FreeBSD kernel, they employ several kernel developers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. So
I think up until the most recent donation from WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. They were the largest monetary contributor to FreeBSD, the FreeBSD Foundation.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And I know when, at some point when I got the money, I'm going to get one of those servers, those little NAS servers or the storage.
Nice.
But they're a little pricey, but again, their customer service is second to none.
And they don't fall down.
Yeah, they don't.
They run forever.
Yeah, so... Oh, a couple other things too. I think we just talked about it. This build now uses ZFS as its file system, and then also the grub loader and GPT partition tables are all for all boot media. And they note that that was a significant change from earlier versions. The other thing too is that they said WebDAV file sharing is now supported.
Hey.
So if you've got some remote or some files sitting out someplace, and you can now attach them, or at least have them available via WebDAV.
Nice.
Yep, and I think that's about it. Well, there's other stuff, but we got to move on.
All right. Yep, moving on. The big one this week is Fedora 21.
Fedora.
Have you updated yet, Matt?
I have not.
It was on the night.
Let it go a week or so first.
Oh, yeah. I heartily subscribe to that philosophy. Let all those crazy people that have to be first in line, let them deal with the little things that happen.
Just in case. Fedora is usually really good, just like any major distribution, Ubuntu, Debian.
Yeah.
You know, but once in a while, something could slip through. And I've been using Linux long enough to have actually been burned by the early update bug.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It happened to me too. I think, I don't know if it was earlier this year or last year, and I ended up having to run update like 3 times, or I had to redo it and redo it. And miraculously, it fixed it eventually, but it was a mess. Mm. So, yeah, so I wait a few weeks now. It's kind of like those people at Hopcat. Did you hear, not to digress, but I guess I will briefly, you know, Hopcat, that new
beer. The new brewery downtown.
Yeah, that beer pub, whatever. They had 1,000 people in line before they opened yesterday morning.
Wow. Wow. Why weren't we there?
Well, we're going to be doing a road trip down there. Believe me, we will. But I think they have these things called crack fries. Now, I have a feeling they're probably really good fries.
Yes.
Hence the name. But the first 200 people, they were going to get free crack fries for a year.
No way.
Oh,
wow.
So all why did I know about this? I'd have camped out. I'd have taken off work.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to have to put that on our list once the initial hubbub dies down. So, yeah. It's right on Woodward Avenue in Detroit.
Because you can't ever have
Too many hops?
Too much hubbub.
We're moving on.
All right.
Clonezilla?
Okay. I didn't know if you guys want to talk a little more about Fedora or
you're all done.
All right. So on the 9th, we have Clonezilla 2.3.1-18.
Yeah, this release, it contains, apparently there were some options that weren't hard-coded in, but weren't set. So, when you needed to rsync something, what happens is it wouldn't, and it was just a part of some, maybe a larger file set, it would rsync the whole thing and not just the part. So, what they ended up doing is making a change to the options, I think, of gzip and pigz. Have you ever heard of pigz?
Pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use pigs at work.
Oh. I've never heard of that one.
I have never heard of pigs. This is pigz.
Yes.
Which is, okay. Yeah,
because sometimes on some of the older servers, when it's running, it's pretty resource intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get an alert for high load, and I'll log in, and I'll see pigs running, and I'll just fucking act the alert and move on, because what are you going to do?
I don't know.
What does pigs do again? Is it a file?
It's a compression thing.
Oh, okay. Compression.
All right. Huh. Yeah, so anyway, but what they ended up doing then is making that change to the options, so now it's not going to rsync. So it sounds like it's heavy resource, or heavy intense resource, whatever I'm trying to say there.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Next up on the 10th, we have Alpine Linux 3.1.0.
Yeah.
They're a security-oriented distro built from scratch.
But not Linux from scratch, or maybe Linux from scratch.
I don't know. They're designed not only for server deployments.
Hey, and these guys, you probably noticed they changed their logo. Remember they had that little mountainy zigzag thing? Yeah, they changed that. So, yeah. Because when I first saw it, I thought, wow, is that a new distro? And then I went back and looked, and no.
Hmm. Yeah, it has like a hex.
A hexagon.
Yeah, with the little mountains. Zigzags
little
for
mountains.
Inside of it, yeah. So. So it looks
and
nice.
Maybe a pyramid at the base of the one mountain.
All right.
It appears.
Oh, it looks like they have a version for Raspberry Pi also. Cool.
Yeah, they kind of doing it right.
All right. So on the 13th, we have Linux Console 2.3, which is the first time I remember seeing it. It's an independent Linux distribution made for game consoles.
Ooh, a Steam box type thing, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has LXDE as a desktop, and it has utility scripts to install Firefox 34, Flash Player, and Chrome.
And you can also, you can install it from Windows. They've got a little file, linuxconsole.exe, which allows you to install it right from Windows. So. And they have, let's see here.
You know what? I doubt they're going to be doing the Steam thing on this because it says they're
based
on
the
goal to revive old computers. This distribution works well on old and semi-old computers with low resources.
Yep. 256 megs of RAM.
Right.
twice what Antix needs. But they also have some optional packages that allow you to install either from the network or the disk, so.
Nice.
I've never even tested it. Maybe I should review it sometime.
Yeah.
The only problem with reviewing a gaming distro is trying to get done with the review.
You're busy playing the games instead.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my fear.
Right.
I can be distracted by the shiny objects.
I think that hits us all.
Yeah.
All right. On the 13th, we have Tinglo 2.0. And they are a desktop distribution with KDE or GNOME, and they're based on Debian testing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And
what's her code name?
Bartholomea.
And actually, that's part of a name for some kind of little sea creature, anemones. You know, it's. I looked it up because I thought just to see if it belonged to something, and so yeah, it is. So apparently, they've named it after that. And they replaced the KDM display manager with SDDM, which is Simple Desktop Display Manager, as the default.
And they're also based on Debian's testing. Mm-hmm. And this one contains the absolute latest KDE 4 and GNOME desktops. And they have two options for installer. You can either use the Debian installer or their very own live installer. They recommend the Debian installer.
You know, I went up to their site and did a little reading, and it was kind of funny because it's like they're still testing it. So if you're kind of a cutting edge, bleeding edge, and don't mind getting cut a little bit once in a while, you might want to give it a try. The other thing about these guys too is that they use the Apper, which I actually use Apper too on my machine at home, but the Apper package and application manager, what they're doing now is it's got the AppStream support, which will display the applications instead of the packages. So what that means is when you're looking at it, instead of seeing all those individual packages that might comprise a program, you're going to see the application itself, which I think is a little more user-friendly. So
that is user-friendly.
Yeah. So.
All right.
So you know what I just noticed?
What's that?
At work, I have to visit a lot of websites to ensure they're up. Our bigger clients will set a check web up for them. So if the string that this is looking for doesn't receive it within a certain number of seconds, it alerts that their site may be down. So I have to go to the site and make sure it's up.
Yeah.
Well, one of our bigger sites sells bikinis, and their ads are now following me around the internet.
Clear your cache.
So on DistroWatch, you get a bikini website advertisement. That's
funny. He does. That's pretty funny. Well, one other thing too about Tanglu is apparently a lot of their supporters were interested in getting a minimal version. So they also have Tanglu Core, which is Tanglu without the graphical user interface. And it contains the basic things you expect in an operating system, but not more. So there's no pre-installed GUI, as I just said, no mail server, etc. So you can use that as a server OS and then kind of customize it to what that server is going to be doing.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that we got one more, right?
No, I think that's it.
Point Linux.
Yeah, Point Linux is a development
release.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so...
Never mind.
Sometime in the future, we may talk about it.
Yeah. Well, it's like Tanglu. It came out last week, I think, as a development release, and I ignored it.
It's on the same page. No?
Yeah, exactly. And then they kind of flipped that pretty quickly. So.
All right. Well, I guess we're going on to...
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
The top five of the week. And yes, there's something new happening this week. But we'll start off at number 5 with Debian with 14.08.
And trending up.
At number 4 is OpenSUSE with 14.19.
And trending down.
Number 3 is Ubuntu with 15.95.
And trending up.
And I think this has got to be the first time that I can remember.
It's been a long time.
At number 2.
Wow.
Yeah, number 2 is Mint with 22.21.
And trending down, and I'm not going to say gotta love the minty goodness.
I have a little smart aleck
they're
remark
in two,
to say
so
it.
So they get no gotta love that minty all goodness.
Right. But in the number one spot is Fedora.
Gotta love that Fedora goodness.
It does not have the same ring to it. You're supposed to go Fedora.
There you go.
Kind of like popping a champagne thing.
Yeah. And they got 29.33
and trending up.
I wonder if they cleaned up that partition thing. They must have.
You're the only one that has a problem with that.
You know, I'm pretty sure Mary they fixed it like the week after you complained about it.
I bet you they did. No, I'm kidding. I'll have to check it out. I mean, and they've got the KDE version, so they're already.
That's what I use.
They've already got a little warm spot in my heart for them. So cool.
All right.
Well, so normally...
We're going on to...
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
Mary's review, but it's reviewing what?
Normally this would be a distro review, and I originally had started to do that, but as it turned out, Michael W. Lucas released a book, I think about a week and a half or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. Matt, what is it?
Free BSD mastery
storage essentials.
I was going to say, you probably have it written down in front of you, right?
I do. I do. But anyway, so instead of that distro review, and, you know, by the way, too, I did install FreeBSD as part of this just to run some of the little commands and things. But anyway, so that's what I'll be talking about this week.
But now, wait a minute, Mary, isn't PCBSD essentially FreeBSD?
Yes, it is, with a lot of utilities and stuff. But I installed it on a different computer. Just I just installed
you didn't
wanna,
raw
FreeBSD.
You didn't want to hose your system.
That's
by,
right.
Okay.
by running partition commands. Oh, anyway, but I'm a fan of Michael W. Lucas, and I'm also a new fan of PCBSD, which, of course, is FreeBSD under the hood. So it made perfect sense for me to review Lucas's most recent book, FreeBSD Mastery Storage Essentials. Now, this book was released in November 2014, and it was released by Tilted Windmill Press. There'll be a link to the site in the show notes. I promise, Tony, I promise. But anyway, so let's get on with the review here. Now, Lucas's book starts as one of my favorite topics, disks. He humorously titles the first chapter, well, actually, it's the first chapter, but he calls it Chapter Zero. And Matt, you may have, if you kind of skimmed through it, you may have seen that. He says, disk sucks. And that's the name of the chapter. This chapter does double duty. It starts by Lucas laying a solid foundation about disks, including quite a bit of detail about early file systems and the tricks that, manufacturers played as far as taking advantage of disks' physical characteristics to make them seem bigger or to hold more data, that type of thing. And it really all depended on whether you used, I think, powers of two or multiples of 1,000 to say how much you had on there and how many sectors and that type of thing.
Because we all know the right way to do it is multiples of two.
Well, it would make sense that that would be the way to do it because it's binary, but...
Until those marketing guys got involved and switched us to tens.
Exactly. And he talks about that. And when you read the book or when you read the half book, you'll, I'm sorry.
Glad that's going to be the first half.
Okay. Yeah, it is. It is the first chapter. But anyway, you'll see that. And, you know, again, the devil's in the details and the details are in the book. Now, the rest of the chapter provides kind of a mini synopsis of the following chapters in the book. Now, Chapter 1 goes into FreeBSD and disks. Lucas here introduces the reader to GEOM. That's G-E-O-M. Now, it's not an acronym, but it really refers to disk geometry. And in FreeBSD, the GEOM framework exists between the device nodes, such as dev DA0, and the disk's device drivers, and handles the data exchanges between them. Lucas discusses individual instances of GEOM, also called GEOM, but with lowercase letters, and the fact that you can kind of stack them and do all sorts of things with them. I think the focus, his focus in discussing them was the fact that they're very flexible. He said that you can take the output of one GEOM class and use it as the input for another. He also compares the capabilities of GEOMs and volume managers. They're not the same. The unlimited flexibility of the GEOM is what really sets it apart. Partitioning schemes were also covered in this chapter, although there were several. Two received the lion's share of focus. MBR, which is, of course, the master boot record scheme, and GPT, which is the GUID partition table scheme. Lucas notes the preference for GPT if you have modern hardware, but he does not short shrift the MBR scheme, which he covers in Chapter 3. But I'm going to do Chapter 2 first, and that's GUID, GPT. Lucas opens this chapter by saying that GPT is a standard for partitioning on modern systems. Unlike the MBR method, it's with its slices and BSD partitions, which are covered in Chapter 3, the GPT method uses only partitions. And I'm going to just step outside the review for a second and just mention that I finally got the flick on the MBR slice, the BSD slice, the BSD partitions, and how they all are hooked together.
Right. You generally do the whole disk as one partition, and then the slices, then you slice it up into your different.
Is that right, Mary? Is that how you read?
Nice try, Matt. We'll get into it in a minute. Not quite. You'll see in a minute. So I'm going to.
I'm pretty sure.
Hang on a second. The BSD partitions.
Let's finish with GPTs.
Yeah, that's what we will. So anyway, but let's see here. The GPT method uses only partitions. All of the steps you need to set up a GPT disk are included. And Lucas goes on to explain how FreeBSD tricks older hardware into using a GPT partition table by placing a and I talked about this in the last episode. It's a protective master boot record. So what happens is that older hardware sees what it thinks is a master boot record, which is really kind of a disguised GPT table, and it then just boots. So I thought that was pretty tricky and kind of cool. Chapter 2 also contains a brief mention of the UEFI bootloader, along with a cautionary note that the support for it is still in its early stages. But instructions are provided nonetheless, along with a suggestion of consulting the FreeBSD documentation if you run into trouble. So I would not be using that on any production system. But, you know, that test system, no. I might try it. So, because it is 64-bit. Well, it's the one I got from you, Tony.
All right.
Anyway, Chapter 3, using MBR partitions. Lucas dives into this partition scheme in earnest in the third chapter, discussing the historical precedents for how FreeBSD held partition information. When it was ported to the x86 hardware, FreeBSD had to contend with the master boot record approach. Again, that's the maximum of 4 primary partitions, called slices in FreeBSD. So those primary partitions are called slices.
Right. They're called slices because your partition is the entire disk, and then your individual slices are your...
No, well, but hang on a second.
Like where you put var is a slice.
Hang on a second. FreeBSD partitions are, in this scheme, are different than DOS partitions.
I understand that.
Okay. Maybe we're saying the same thing. We're just on different streets.
Maybe.
We're looking the same direction.
I think the word's different, though.
Yeah.
It's opposite, right? They have BSD, a slice, which is the entire drive, and then you partition out inside that slice.
Yeah, you know, you think about logical partitions.
Are we
that
still
are
talking about GPT if we moved
no,
on to
No, we
MBR.
Moved on to MBR.
That's what I thought.
Yes.
And I really thought that your entire disk was a single partition, partition zero, and then your slices were inside the partition.
I would defer to the lady that read the book.
Well, hang on here just a second. Let me just keep reading this.
Several
instead of adopting it, FreeBSD Project used the MBR slice as a BSD disk and then used the BSD disk labels for partitions inside those slices. The disk label method apparently was too entwined with the kernel, so what they ended up doing is keeping the disk label method, which is the FreeBSD method when you have that, but you end up up to 4 slices on there, and then inside each slice you have your FreeBSD partitions, and each one of those FreeBSD partitions has I think in that slice you have your disk label that outlines what's in that slice, how many partitions you got, FreeBSD partitions.
I'm confused.
Read the book.
I will read the book.
Okay. Because I think, I don't think you're too far off from it, Matt, but believe me, it took me, you know, I never could really figure it out.
I might be using the wrong terminology, but I actually think we're saying the same thing.
I think we're not too far off. But anyway, but each slice can be thought of as a container to hold FreeBSD partitions with the disk label identifying the location of the FreeBSD partitions in that slice. As is typical throughout the book, Lucas provides specific commands to complete such tasks as MBRing the disk, which you can do. I mean, he provides that. Create and remove slices, as well as actions involving disk labels. Chapter 4 covers the Unix file system, or UFS. According to Lucas, many UFS concepts underlie other file systems, and he stresses the importance of knowing its basics so you can understand how FreeBSD manages file systems. What I learned is that UFS really consists of 2 components. You've got the Unix file system, the UFS portion, which handles the front-end user-facing things like permissions, file names, and putting files in directories. And then you've got the fast file system. And Kirk McCusick wrote that. So, which is called FFS, which handles writing files to disk and arranging them for quick access. I mentioned that it's written by Kirk McCusick. And now I finally understand fast file. I'd seen references to fast file system, but I never saw it as an option. And that's because it's really the back end.
It's part of UFS, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But, you know, again, it toils in the background while UFS gets all the attention. Lucas explains how UFS handles today's multiple storage options via via a storage abstraction layer, a layer called vNodes. Now, a vNode is a translation layer between the BSD kernel and the file system on the media you're using. Lucas says they're never directly manipulated, but you'll encounter them whenever you're dealing with storage, especially with different file systems. So it's kind of a virtual node instead of like an iNode, I guess. That was me just saying that, so do not take that as truth. And Lucas goes on to explain the various mounting options with UFS. I won't go into detail because the commands are practically the same for Linux. So that's kind of nice. So anybody who wants to kind of experiment with FreeBSD, you're gonna see a lot of commonality. I mean, there are certainly differences. What was particularly interesting to me was the ability of UFS to change its behavior based on the fullness of the file system. On near empty file systems, it goes for speed, but as that file system fills, it then shifts to a mode that maximizes space utilization. Lucas then steps through the process for creating and tuning a UFS file system. And I had no idea that the command background FSCK lets BSD perform a file system integrity check on a system running in multi-user mode.
Oh, so that's apparently, nice.
Yeah, you can do that. Now, the key thing for that is that your file system can't be too messed up. So if it's not too messed up and it's just kind of doing a check and maybe, you know, just kind of doing maybe a maintenance type check, mm-hmm. you can do that and still use the system. Mm. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
UFS snapshots are also covered in this chapter, including the actions to take to create and access snapshots. Again, all this information was accompanied by the necessary commands. Although FreeBSD also supports ZFS, Michael W. Lucas does not spend much time talking about ZFS. When reading the afterword, and Matt, that's what's found at the end of the book. I know you've never gotten that before. I'm sorry, I wrote that joke and I was laughing to myself when I wrote it.
Yeah.
I found out why. He plans to publish a book on ZFS and specialty file systems next year. So that, I think that should be a good book. Chapter 5 covers file encryption. The first question in this chapter is whether you need encryption, and Lucas covers the pros and cons of disk encryption. And yes, there are cons. For example, disk encryption can attract unwanted attention from government agencies. Lucas mentions that FreeBSD supports several encryption methods, but he focuses on the two major ones, Jelly, and that's G-E-L-I, and then GBDE, which is Giambi-based disk encryption. I was hoping Giambi. Jason Giambi used to play for the Yankees. All right, we're moving on. Each offers its own strengths, but Lucas points out that all methods have common factors, and he covers each one of those in this chapter. But you know what was interesting to me is I went to the book I got, the FreeBSD, the design and implementation of the FreeBSD operating system.
Yes.
They did not go into any, I didn't see any real reference to GBDE in that book. So, and then I found out that I think this GBDE may be on its way out. But he still includes it, and I guess it makes sense. Now, chapters 6 and 7 discuss Jelly and GBDE respectively. In the interest of time, I won't go into the details. So it's all in the book. Check it out. Chapter 8 is swap space. And by the way, we only go up to chapter 11, just so you know how long we've got. Lucas covers the basics about swap in this chapter, including the time-honored swap calculation. He also explains how to encrypt your swap space using the available FreeBSD tools. I was unaware of the fact that you could also use a file as swap space.
Yes.
I didn't know that. According to Lucas, he said it's not ideal, but it could be a useful bridge, or a bridge for temporary situations if, for example, you're replacing a failing drive. So it's kind of interesting.
All right.
The standard actions for swap are listed along with an explanation for what it does and why. With FreeBSD 10, the approach for starting a swap at a swap file at boot is changed. Now there's an entry in FS tab, very similar to how Linux sets it up. He also provides a useful example of how he encrypted his swap space by simply adding .eli to the end of the device name in his etc/fs tab file because he had Jelly already installed. So the swap on command recognizes that marker and automatically encrypts it with a one-time key. Pretty slick.
Ooh.
Chapter 9, Geom Raid. Now, you know, in Chapter 1, he introduces us to Geom, which is disk geometry, but in Chapter 9, he continues it and talks about it in reference to RAID. He goes into detail about all the different kinds of RAID, and you know, actually, RAID 0 isn't really RAID because it's not redundant. It's just striping.
Say that again?
RAID stands for Redundant Array of Independent Disks.
Correct.
RAID 0 is striping. And
correct.
There's no redundancy.
Right. It just
I never thought about that. It takes two disks
and turns them into one.
Yeah. And he kind of says, you know, it's not really redundant. But
or 7,000 disks and turns them into one.
Do you know there's such a thing as RAID 0 plus 1?
Yes.
You stripe and then mirror.
Yes.
And that's
as opposed
more
to RAID 10, which is mirrored then striped.
Yeah, and he talked about if you wanted to set that up, you could use the directions he provides for RAID 10. Just run them backwards. you'll see that in the book. It was pretty funny because you know it's his brand of humor. He's got kind of dry humor, and so he'll have these little things throughout. So not only is it informative, but it was humorous at the same time. And I'm all for humor. But anyway, he's got the RAID essentials. I won't go into much detail there. But he provides all the commands to set up and create and maintain and remove or destroy these RAID disks. Chapter 10 covers SMART, or the Self-Monitoring Analysis and Reporting Technology, which lets you proactively monitor your hard drives and replace them if they fail. Or as Lucas humorously notes, it doesn't guarantee you'll get advanced notice of failures, but it sure beats waiting blindly for the crash. but like Linux, FreeBSD uses the SMART CTL.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Program to query.
SmartMon tools.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I did is I installed them on my Kubuntu box at home and running some stuff just to see what they had. But it includes information on SMART tests because SMART has test, I didn't know it had test routines.
Yes.
It does.
I know.
He cautions, Lucas cautions about, cautions that a proper test, would read and write data to every sector, but that in the process would destroy the data already
don't
on there.
Do that.
Yeah. So he says, but,
they have
so
non-destructive tests also.
They do, yeah. And it checks electronics, mechanisms, and the ability to read from the disk. So all equally important, in my opinion. Although Lucas admits it's a brief introduction, you'll find it useful even if you run Linux. And the best is saved for last, Chapter 11, Complex Installation. And I thought, wow, this is really going to be interesting. But it covers more advanced tasks such as installing to mirrors, which he said you can do if, for example, first up is installing to gmir. According to Lucas, you may want to do this, for example, if your computer uses BIOS and you want to use RAID 3, 5, or 10, or other complex RAID protocols. For this method, Lucas describes a workaround for instances where the BIOS can't find partitions or doesn't understand FreeBSD's geom classes. The workaround places /boot in a mirror drive and then root and /user in other directories on RAID 5. But he cautions, you know, again, there's just little cautionary things about all of these things that, RAID 5 apparently is like industry standard. Are you familiar with that?
I know what RAID 5 is. It allows for, like, if you have RAID, you need at least 3 drives to set up a RAID 5, and then you can lose 1 drive.
Yeah, and then you can just
swap it in with a new drive.
Apparently it's kind of like a quasi industry standard for RAID. I guess. But he walks you through the process. But he said the FreeBSD,
RAID 6 lets you lose 2 drive, Mary.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't even know that.
I thought RAID 5 would let you lose everything down to 2 drives.
No.
You know, Meet BSD.
You can lose 1 drive.
Oh.
At the Meet BSD conference, they did this thing where they had, I don't know if it was FreeNAS running, but they started pulling stuff out of it just to see how long it would last. Crazy stuff, I'll tell you.
Ooh, those crazy kids.
Those crazy kids. but anyway, so he also walks you through the process of partitioning and all of those steps that you want to do if you're going to set up, if you're going to install manually. Remember, I did, I think, Obian, a few episodes ago, and I was talking about the manual install. It's not like I walked through an installer. I had to take these discrete steps. Partitioning, assigning a partition scheme, configuring, the table, the bootloader, the files, all that kind of stuff I had to do manually. He walks you through that here for FreeBSD if you want to do that. and then, let's see, I'm kind of winding up here. He says that the installation script is also a section on installing via installation script. It has all the commands to create your geoms and file systems and extract FreeBSD into them. Conveniently, he shows the sample in the book, but if you go to his site, you can download the script and give it a try yourself. So. Full disk encryption is covered, and he provides those instructions. And then the final section of the book is expanding virtual disks. Now, I found this book to be interesting and informative, and at $9.99 as an ebook, I thought it was well worth the price of admission. I'm going to have a link to his book and also a link to his site. But I thought I learned a lot, and although I wouldn't call myself a FreeBSD storage master or mistress, whatever, I certainly know more coming out of it than I did going in. So.
Yeah, I really enjoy Michael Lucas's writing style.
Yeah. He's doing it full time now. You know.
Yes, he is.
You know.
He talked about that at the web meeting that some of us weren't
at. Dinner afterwards.
Some of us weren't at.
It's really interesting. We go to during the meeting is the official presentations. And then, afterwards, everybody, or certain people that want to go will go to dinner. And we take the club will pay for the dinner for the, presenter. So it's always interesting to go to that afterwards because then you get just an open forum to talk. And so he was talking about his whole publishing process and the different operating systems and computers he has to use to do that. And in the past, you know, we had a presenter from Facebook there, so it was neat to sit down and talk to him because his talk was about
some open source tools they use, right?
It was about how his network flow analysis for Facebook. Mm-hmm. But we afterwards got to sit down and talk about like the culture and working at Facebook and stuff. It was neat.
Did you like him?
Yeah.
That's fun.
I'd seen him.
The pun, Facebook-like.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But
it was really neat.
Hey, I'm sure it was interesting.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, anyway, so that's the review, and the world's a better place because of it, I hope.
Very cool.
But I get the book. I mean, even if you don't use FreeBSD and maybe you're just sort of thinking about it, get the book. It's interesting. I learned a lot.
All right. Very nice.
Okay.
So, next we're going on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news.
Beep, beep, beep. Yeah, what does that Morse code for? What we say
some
there,
kind
right?
of news. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Tech news of the week.
One of our listeners sent it to us. Yeah. I'm not sure what it actually says.
I think it was tech news of the week.
If we take him at his word, I think it was tech news of the week.
All right, cool.
And not these guys are idiots.
Yeah. Pay no attention to anything they say.
In Morse code.
Yep, and every episode he laughs and laughs.
Oh, my God. All right, who's going up first with our little news items?
I'll go first. First up I have, is Google coming back to the open community on document formats? If you go to computerworlduk.com, it has an article there, and that is the title of it. And Google's less than enthusiastic support for Open Document is a little surprising for a company built on open source. However, that might be changing in the near future. According to Chris DiBona, Google's head of open source, who, at the ODF Plugfest in London, said support for exporting ODS and ODT files in ODF 1.2 format is now under development. And that's the one used by all modern suites, including Microsoft Office and LibreOffice.
And is the deciding factor for you as far as whether a distro is a distro, whether it's got one of those.
It just needs it can have numeric and AbbeyWord, and that is a productivity suite. Failing a productivity suite, it's not a desktop distribution. Anyway.
Can't you do that in Emacs?
I'm sure you could if you had the 11th finger.
Oh, let's start those Emacs buy wars. What are the good old days?
A possible factor for this sudden push to ODF could be that more and more governments are either adopting or looking to adopt ODF as a standard. And, of course, Google wants to be able to sell Chromebooks and Google Drive to governments.
Indeed they do.
And then the only other story I have is Marines swap Microsoft for Linux OS in Northrop Grumman radar.
Woohoo!
And if you go to the CapitalGazette.com, that's where I found this one. And today a large number of companies run their mission-critical apps on Linux. On the battlefield, that term takes on an entirely new meaning. Hence why the USMC went with Linux for their new radar system. The system originally ran on Windows XP, but with that recently reaching EOL, they needed something different, and switching to Linux just seemed like a no-brainer. Do you know why it was a no-brainer?
Why is that?
I don't have this written down here, but I
assume it's
the
stability.
No.
No? What?
Why they switched?
Yeah, the major reason to go with Linux versus...
Sunset. XP Sunset.
No. Well, you did not listen to the...
I posted that article.
Right. But why did they go to Linux instead of saying... Because it would have been much easier to change their code to work with Windows 7 than it would have been to completely change operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they did it was for hardware compatibility. Mm. Linux is compatible with so many more laptops than Windows 7 or Windows 8.
Oh.
I find that hard. Oh, I backwards compatible. Yes. Old, slightly, yes. Maybe three older, or four years old.
Yes.
Oh, sure.
So that was the major factor. Because then if they would have went to 7, then they would have had to upgrade a ton of hardware that they didn't want to upgrade. So Linux was the choice.
All right.
And that's all I have.
All right. Well, that's actually a good segue because I've got a news item. Speaking of governments and, you know, what they use and that type of thing, I don't know if you guys saw this. And the reason why it caught my eye is because of my former life as an air traffic controller many years ago, that apparently there was a messed up flight plan that caused the mainframe at in the UK air traffic control system to go belly up. Last week, and I was thinking
to myself,
"That's
such a small island. They really only have one whole system that covers almost the whole island, right? It's not like in the U.S. where they hand you like
centers, the air traffic control centers.
They hand you off to the different centers as you go across the U.S.
You must not have seen my I posted.
I did, but I didn't read it.
Oh, but no, there was like this video of just showed all of the arrival paths and all of this. But no, I mean when you're talking about Edinburgh, you're talking about Northern Ireland, you're talking about all that whole area. There's a ton of aircraft that fly through there, but apparently, what had happened is that there was a flight plan that was entered in that was messed up, and it was messed up to the point where it just caused the system to go down. So then that caused me thinking, okay, so what are they using? Are they using, they're apparently using IBM mainframes, and I think it was like the
AS400s?
No, it wasn't AS400s. It was like the S90s or something like that.
Wow.
And, the S390, excuse me. And I was kind of curious as to what flight data processing system or what operating system it used. So I went to the IBM site and looked it up.
There's three. Proprietary.
Yeah, there are like three. Well, actually, you can get it with Red Hat, you can get it with SUSE, and you can get it with IBM's own. And I'm thinking that, which could be a flavor of, you know, Unix or Linux or something. But it was like, it was not VMS because I know that's the old VAX. Operating system, but it was some IBM proprietary system. I went looking around to see if I could find out which specifically was for this, and that was not available. But I did find some air traffic control games, so I played them. But anyway, it's the NATS system, so I have a link to that in the show notes. So that was kind of my segue in. Just a couple of other little mentions here for news items. You guys remember a couple years ago we were kind of tracking Barnes & Noble and their little tiff with Microsoft and the whole Android
patent.
Yeah, over the Nook, exactly. And then Barnes & Noble ended up rolling over. And then Microsoft ended up buying into the Nook division. I think it was like 14 or 17% they bought into it. Well, apparently they're ending it. Microsoft is ending its relationship or partnership with Barnes & Noble, and that's simply because the Nook has not really taken off as I think both parties had hoped.
It stayed just an e-reader.
Yeah.
It's an excellent e-reader, but it is really just an e-reader.
I rooted mine. Remember, I send that to you?
Yep, I still have it.
Yep, I rooted it. It was the first device I ever rooted, first and only device I ever rooted. My Samsung, I'm going to try to root that, I think. I mentioned that before.
Didn't you try with your phone?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to try. I just haven't sat down and I started to do it, and then I was going to do it in, I hate to say this, I was going to do it in Windows, but I know. And then I just decided, I started to download some stuff, and it just looked like crapware, and I just thought, I'm getting this off my system and not doing it. So, yeah, I'll try it in Ubuntu, see if I can do it there.
All right.
And then I think those are my two, and then I'll have KDE Corner when we get around to it. Oh!
All right.
Never mind. I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay.
I'm shaking my finger.
She stopped and shook her finger at me and then didn't say anything. I'm like, what did I do now?
Nothing, man.
All right. Well, I have two articles, one via Mary that I saw you posted this morning, and then you You said you'd let me talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
About how Yahoo.
I talk too much.
Yahoo is now prompting Chrome users to upgrade to Firefox. So, you know, last time we had the article about how Firefox is now going using Yahoo or Bing as the its search engine and their default search engine. So now when you go to one of the Yahoo properties, it prompts users to upgrade to Firefox. Oh, Mary sees it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see it on mine, but
well, it's because I'm wondering if because you're running Linux, it's not doing it.
Oh yeah,
this is running BSD, so
yeah. So I was wondering whether they would prompt a Chromebook user to upgrade to Firefox.
I didn't fire up my Chromebook today, but let's see.
That's some homework for you.
If I go to Yahoo.
But
yeah.
it
happens?
It is confirmed in Explorer Opera, and there's this new Yannix browser.
Although, you know, I went there with Firefox, so it says that.
Upgrade to the new Firefox.
What browser did you use? Chrome?
Chrome.
Huh. That's interesting. Let me try again.
You must have something locked down, Tony.
Maybe. Oh, I do have a,
like a JavaScript suppressor or something?
Oh, it does show up for mine now too. I didn't see it before. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's the new thing going on with the newer versions of,
I guess the marriage really is over.
That's right.
There it is, yep.
Yeah, Mary sees it too.
Yep. In Chromium.
All right. And then, you know, another thing I was chatting in the IRC with, Dowdle, and he said that Firefox, and there's an issue with Firefox under the licensing agreements with Fedora.
Today?
And, no, it was like a week and a half ago.
Okay.
And he sent me this article, and I'll put it in the show notes, it'll be in the show notes, and I'll throw it in IRC right now. But apparently the new version of Firefox will go through and automatically download that H.264 codec from the Cisco website.
For video?
Right, for video stuff, and it automatically downloads it. Well, that's a violation of one of the policies for Fedora, that it can't just automatically go out, because there's a license behind it that you're supposed to agree to, but Firefox just automatically downloads it for you and assumes that you agree to it. So Fedora had to recompile or whatever and leave that part out so it wouldn't automatically download it. That was interesting. And it's called Hello is one of the components also that is similar to that. And from what I heard from another podcast, Hello is a chat client built into Firefox. So it looks interesting.
Huh. So. Yeah, it does. It sounds interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's all I had.
Okay. So is it time for... Do you have a security bit this week, Tony, or no?
No, I didn't. Well, there was one thing that I wanted to do some more research on. I'll mention it right now. I don't have any links because I don't. I didn't get to do the research.
Okay.
But there was a... malware that was found out, and it's been talked about on a bunch of podcasts now, so I guess it would be a moot point for me to go into it a whole lot. Mm-hmm. But it's called Regen, and it...
How's that spelled? R-E-G-E-N?
I think E-I-N.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a really good explanation of what it does and some of its implications is on the Security Now podcast. From, I think it was 2 weeks ago, but he goes through and talks about how it's so sophisticated, they had to have been one of a government agency that created it. So either NSA or GCQ.
The Israelis again.
Right? Yeah. Yep.
And, it's pointed against, you know, it's a very specific target. And what's really interesting about it is that it's practically impossible to find unless you see it actively installing or removing itself. That's the only time you ever see it.
Really?
Because it takes the storage where it runs out of, It puts hex code or binary code into the registry and executes that. So there's no executable file on the computer. And then where it stores data is in that 8 meg slack at the end of a partition where it's not actually in a partition, but it's on the hard drive.
Remember those little spaces I used to have, Matt?
Yeah.
You gave me our time about?
Yeah, yeah.
And now viruses are taking care of it. So that was just really interesting technology that they were taking use of.
Now, if you live boot, though, they wouldn't be able to do that unless it sat in RAM someplace.
Right. Well, and it only works on Windows. It doesn't work on Linux. And it's very a targeted attack. So it's, you know, for specific... Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who they said specifically goes to, but, you know, enemies of the state kind of things. But it sits there and it creates its own server running and it will pull every keystroke, everything you're doing on the computer. It logs it and sends it to their server and, for espionage. Yeah, it's a very strong espionage tool.
Speaking of, keystroke loggers and sending keystrokes to a remote server. Did you guys see that testers who are testing Windows 10, apparently Microsoft has built into it
phone home utility?
It does phone home, but what it does is it records your keystrokes.
Really?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, and people who expressed some concern about it, testers, Microsoft said, well, it was in the EULA or the, you know, the thing they signed.
Oh, yeah. Like anybody ever reads
Nobody
those
reads
things.
That. It's, I'm not kidding you. That's how stuff gets snuck in there. So
that's right. They assume you're not going to read it.
Yeah,
they just throw anything in there and they say, well, we said you were going
to do it. So apparently they're capturing it. And what they're claiming is that they're doing it to help understand how the testing is going and this type of thing. So the question then, I think, the person had written the article.
So you start smashing on your keyboard.
You know? Yeah, obscenities or something. But, the person that wrote the article or the little blurb that I saw wonders, whether it's going to be removed when Windows 10 is released or whether it'll just be, but I think now it's on the radar. So somebody's going to be keeping track of it, I would suspect.
Right.
Closed source sucks.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So. All right.
So KDE stuff?
Yeah, we do. We do. And actually, I have got, and unfortunately, because I'm not running Linux on my laptop, this particular little service menu is not going to, will not have any use on my laptop. But what it is a Deb RPM converter service menu. And what you simply do is you simply right-click on the file. Again, this is KDE service menus, for those of you who don't know, are complete eye candy for me. I just love them. They're ways to accomplish actions both on individual files or maybe entire directories of files by just simply right-clicking on the file or directory and then selecting whatever action you want to take, whether it's resize images or, in this case here, do a Deb RPM convert. So you can go back and forth by just right-clicking on it and clicking convert. So there's probably scripts Alien in the background to do this. But unfortunately, it's only available for 64-bit systems because this morning I tried to install it on my 32-bit. And they don't really go into detail that it was only 64-bit.
You're still running a 32-bit OS?
Machine?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, my machine is like 5 years old.
I guarantee you it's a 64-bit machine. Right?
No,
yeah,
it's not.
Yeah, if it's dual core, it's
a 64-bit.
My workstation at home?
Yeah.
You could run 32-bit.
I know what I'm doing. I'm running the 32-bit version of Kubuntu, I bet, on it.
You know, I still do that on all my computers. I'm still running
32-bit. 64-bit had flash problems a couple years ago.
Yes.
I was kind of complaining about that.
Yes.
Okay. I bet those are fixed.
Yes.
Well,
with Flash, unless you're using Chrome, you're not, Flash isn't supported on Linux anymore anyway.
Okay. Yeah. I remember they were ending it and talking about that. So how would I, what action would I take? Uname space A or what?
Yeah, uname dash A, I'll tell you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Space dash A. Yeah. All right. I'll do that when I get home and just see what I am running. And if it is 32-bit, I know it's 32-bit because it told me that this morning. Maybe what I'll do is just reinstall. I'll have to reinstall clean. Oh my gosh, all those things.
Yeah,
I've
but
done.
Your home partition is, you can leave your home partition alone.
Oh yes, I would, because it's separate. Yes. But just reinstalling the OS, I've got a lot of programs.
It's right. So customized. All of it gone.
Mary. I know. That's why I'm thinking,
you know, I would,
am I going to make that sacrifice for this little service menu?
Yeah, and the way that you're never going to use anyways.
Well, you know, exactly, because I can usually get anything because, again.
Yeah, that's, you know, Deb Ubuntu. To RPM and RPM to Deb it was useful back in the day when these guys put their stuff out in Deb and these guys put their stuff out in RPM and now you can get
yeah, they do them for you.
Almost absolutely anything you want, neither Deb or RPMs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, good, I won't have to uninstall.
You know, I was just thinking about why I'm still running 32-bit on my desktop. Is because
why, Tony?
The network card that I have, if I'm running 32-bit and I have more than 2 gigs of RAM, the network card does not work. It's a flaw in the firmware. If I'm running 64-bit
really?
With more than 2 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
So I have 4 gigs of RAM in there. And I would try to get out. The network card would recognize for as it's booting. And once you get on, it would give you an IP address. And then like 10 seconds later, the network card would just fail and would just turn off. And there was, I had wiped my, when I first got that motherboard, I wiped my machine like 4 times trying to get it to work. And then finally found this bug in the firmware.
And then you just think about all that time that you just spent trying to get something. Oh, I hate that.
And then I'm like, you know what? With PAE kernels, it really doesn't matter because you can run 4 gigs of RAM or 8 gigs of RAM.
2032.
I won't be, using
dead.
That motherboard.
Yeah, you'll be using that to kind of regulate your oxygen bottle. No,
right.
Just kidding. 18 years? 14, 24, 30. No, that's 25 years. Oh, you'll be. Yeah, you'll still be around.
2032?
I'll be dead by then.
Today's 14. 32. Yeah. 2032.
Yeah, 14, 24. Oh, you're right.
It's called math, Mary. I know it's hard, but come on.
It's a good thing. Right. You know, I'm retiring on Friday. It's a good thing. It is a good thing. So anyway, and the only other KDE corner thing I have is that they released KDE Frameworks 5.5. And what that is it's actually a set of add-on libraries to Qt or Qt that enables, you know, a wide range of needed functionality for development. So anyway, but that's out, and I'm going to start looking at Plasma, the 5, KDE Plasma 5, just that new system. Just going to check it out and see how it looks. And that's it, gentlemen.
All right.
All right.
You know, I had one thing of personal news. I forgot to tell you guys at the beginning, and actually I've known for about 2 months now, then I forgot to tell you guys each time we get together.
Oh my.
I don't know why, God. But.
This is our last episode. No. What is it?
But BB 3.0 will be coming soon.
Wow.
That's baby Bemis.
I got it, Tony. Yeah.
You know
baby
what?
Bemis 3.0.
Yeah. You know what I initially thought? Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
I thought some bulletin board program, and I'm thinking, what the heck?
BBS.
Yes. Bulletin board 3.0.
Yeah, V-Bulletin. We're switching from WordPress to V-Bulletin.
I'm so embarrassed. Well, congratulations.
Yep. Thanks.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Thanks. We're due in June 20th or so.
Now, that's the royal weir, because obviously your wife is going to have
this
kid.
Yeah, she's
by
going through the whole thing. But I appreciate you saying that, because I just, you know.
Yeah, well, it takes two of us to put it together and to make, and it takes...
In a manner of speaking.
Right.
I guess you're right.
we're excited, and with the move and everything, it's all going to be in the new house.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons I bring that up is that my goals for running or being a Linux conventioner...
Oh,
a
yeah.
professional convention,
on
maybe
hold,
it hold on hold for a year or two.
So. What do they call those? Kind of a groupie, a Linux convention groupie.
Right.
Well, normally they're called the press.
Oh. Oh, that's right. We're doing it. You're doing it as part of. That's right. We're gonna have to get you a little fedora with a little press thing on it.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cute.
So we were talking about going to SELF. Yeah, I'm not gonna be able to go this next year, and I wanted to go to. Northwest Linux Fest, and probably won't be able to do that either. Although that's the same weekend as PenguinCon, so it's that's a no-brainer for me.
Well,
to drive across town or fly across the country.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Oh, so Southeast Linux. Oh, wow. So you might not be going down there.
Yeah, probably not to Southeast. So you guys will be going.
Is that because you have to stay home with the baby?
Yeah. Because that's June.
I'm well versed in these things. Okay.
June 18th or something, isn't it?
When is the baby due?
June 20th.
Oh.
He did just say that, Mary.
I know. I was getting ready for the next segment of the show.
No, it's all right. But
well, congratulations, Tony.
Thank you.
Ah. All right. So I guess we're going to, I'm just kind of shocked.
There we go.
All right.
All right.
Up next.
I'll keep working at it. You'll have that basketball team eventually.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Yes, is it alive? I do have an episode.
Oh, no.
Or I do have yes.
We have an Is It Alive. This is Ambush Is It Alive.
It is the Ambush edition. And as a matter of fact, the reason why I did this is because, you know, they released the Linux kernel this week, 3.18, or was it last week? Anyway, past our last episode. And, you know, they name these things. And do you know what this...
Really? I had no idea, Mary.
Shush. Do you know what they named this one?
I don't. I don't follow.
That was your answer for the other one. You have no idea. Okay. Diseased Newt.
Diseased Newt. Okay.
Yes.
Huh.
And, you know, I don't know if Mr. Torvalds himself comes up with these or there's some little discussion.
No, he comes up with them pretty much on his own.
So I thought for Is It Alive, and again, this is our quiz show, that it might be kind of fun to name or to say these kernel names, and you decide whether it's a real kernel name or it's one that I made up. So, you know, again, for any of you who have not listened, it's this during this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. And of course, we twist the concept every so often, although I've done two twists in a row.
Mary, it's your gig. As often as you want to twist it, twist it.
All right. So this week is Twist Week, and I'm going to challenge Matt and Tony to decide whether the name is actual name of a released kernel by the kernel team, or whether it's something I just made up. So, are you ready?
All right.
Oh, you know, I hit my scroll wheel, and you know, it depends on where your scroll wheel is located.
Switched your desktop.
I did.
Yeah.
I'm back though. All right. Here's the first one, gentlemen. Winking Wombat.
Not a kernel name.
I'm going to go, it is.
It is not.
Oh.
Next one. Unicycling Gorilla.
Yes.
Not a kernel name.
It is. Stable Penguin.
Yes.
No.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
Tasmanian Tortoise.
No.
That is, yes.
Let me say no.
It is not.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Gluteus minimus.
No.
No.
All right. I tried to get one that would be funny, but it is not. I made that one up. I originally had gluteus maximus. I thought, oh, that's just way too easy to guess. All right. How about vindictive armadillo?
Yes.
No.
It is.
Oh, man, yeah.
Tony smashed Matt. Smashed him.
Is that it?
All right, yes, that's it. All so right. Join us next week for another edition of Is It Alive? You won by like three.
Yeah, that was good.
But when I was going down that list, I thought, oh, God, that's just begging for an Is It Alive segment. Oh, the names they come up with, how funny. So, all right.
All right, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So now.
All right, next we have.
It's listener feedback time.
Listener feedback. And you can also call us. Our phone number is 734.
That was Matt feedback.
Right. You can call us at 734-258-7009.
And you didn't have the beeper going either, or the beep.
Beep, beep.
Matt,
well, oh, yeah.
Matt, yeah, a little,
Hopefully me just talking over him will take care of that.
No one heard that.
It wasn't too bad of a word, but.
No, that's true.
All right. So we have one email for the last 2 weeks that I see.
I have two, I think.
Oh, well, we have one from Scott Dowdle.
Mm-hmm.
And
continuing the...
Well, it was
Scott Dowdle
and then Scott Dowdle again.
Oh, I only saw one. Oh, yeah, I do see the other one. Okay.
I let you guys handle it because I can't keep up with it.
Well, actually, it was between you and Matt. Factor versus Factor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The spelling of it versus why you couldn't get in there.
That's two different commands. It's Factor and Factor.
Yeah.
That was the first email.
From Scott.
Correct.
Yep.
So Matt was trying to print the prime numbers of factoring or of something. What is that command? He says, Matt said that he ran the command line and it just sat there. I'm guessing that he ran factor rather than factor-er.
F-A-C. All right, just to clarify for the listening audience, F-A-C-T-E-R versus F-A-C-T-O-R.
Right, and so he ran the O-R version, and the description says, print the prime number, the prime factors of each specified integer number. If none are specified in the command line, read from the standard input. So whenever, if you don't hit anything.
It sits there.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and I just did, factor 2, 3, 4, 4, and the factors are 2, 2, 2, and 293. Pretty cool. So. And you know, if you do Cal, you'll get the mark.
Really very good. Where you can see 3 months at a time. Do Cal 3.
You can do Cal 12. Get the whole year.
Entire year.
Cal 12. Cal space 12. All right. More command line fun.
That's right.
Hey, speaking of command line and bash and bash scripting and bash junkies and...
Oh, yeah.
So, Matt, on our last episode, you had to push out the release of your brand new site.
Well, it's live now. Bashjunkie.org. But,
Oh, there's a bot.
But,
and it's not broadcast using this tool.
No, it's a totally vanilla install of WordPress. I was using a theme called Casper.
But
what happened was why I had to push it out was I totally foobarred the database. I had to redo the whole thing.
Oh, man.
And when I did that, I did not reinstall Casper. I'm going to leave it open to suggestions. Suggest a theme for me.
You know one I actually really do like is, no, I can't think of the name.
Matrix?
Wiggle your fingers in the air.
That's right.
The wiggle your fingers in the air theme.
The toggle. It's the toggle wave.
I gotta look. It's, responsive. That's what it's called. It's so it looks one way in your web, in your computer, and then it responsively changes for your phone. And it looks really nice on your phone. It's really cool.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
It didn't go over big with him, Tony. Nice try, though. I found it interesting.
Thanks.
Wow, Matt, talking about vanilla, bash history. That's what we got here.
Yeah. That's another thing I need to talk to Tony about.
What's that?
He's got the one link on this
that goes nowhere.
Site there goes nowhere.
Nice.
The post exists, but for some reason the link that WordPress made when I made the post is broken. I gotta talk to you.
You probably turned down or turned off, or when you reinstalled the the rewrites.
You broke it.
So it's an option in settings.
I told you to use, but it was before I made this post. I said use the abbreviated name, like don't number the posts or do any poogie boogie stuff. Whatever the post is called, that's what you name the page.
Oh, okay.
And it did it. Like, if you hover the link, it says, it calls it Bash History, the name of the post.
Does it have write access to the htaccess file? Your web server needs to have write access to the htaccess file. Because that's where it does it. Yeah. It does it in mod rewrites in the htaccess file.
That's in the root directory of your web server.
No.
Really?
No,
it's
not? In your web root.
Yeah,
it's web root. Oh, okay. It's in your web root.
You can have different
That's what I meant.
You can have different htaccess files all the way through the...
One for each folder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you know?
No. And that makes sense.
You can allow something higher up, but then allow it lower down, it will be allowed.
Yeah.
Oh, that
makes sense.
Yeah. All right, so Matt's site starts off, "This is my blog." As the name implies, it will mostly contain things about Bash and Bash scripting. However, if I find something interesting, it will probably make an appearance.
That's it.
Okay, we understand why you weren't going to say anything, because it's just about ready. Okay, well, you know what, Matt? I'll tell you what, the new year, we're going to kick off bashjunkie.org.
There you go.
Right now it's just junkie.org. Just kidding. No, it's gonna, I know it's, once you get it going, it's gonna look
there,
great.
I did write up a whole history section. There's a whole big post there. You just can't see it.
Well, we're sorry about that. So, alright.
After I fix the write access to the AP access, how do I get it to then change the rewrite rules again?
You'd turn off that option and then turn it back on. But it'll also work with the whatever question or p = the number. It'll still work with that even if you turn that option off. It's just whatever the default when it shows up in the web browser, the rewrite. So if you have a really long name for your post and you're sending somebody the link and you want it to be a short, there's an option in WordPress to say short URL, and it's just the p - the post number. So. Yeah.
I'm sure this will be figured out pretty soon.
That's right.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. Let's see. We had some more listener feedback. One from Richard Hughes of TLTS.
Wants us to run a promo, which we'll be more than happy to do.
That's right. So that will be tagged on the end with our other promos. And check out the other shows, because they are good shows. We wouldn't run the promos if we didn't like them.
That's right, because they're friends of the shows or folks we know.
That's right.
And they've got a good podcast.
Yeah, so this will be the third one. So we have one, it'll be for Tilts, or the Linux Link Tech Show, one for the Linux Lugcast, and the other one is for, do you guys know what it is?
I have no idea.
Well, are you talking about the promos at the end?
No. Yeah, Linux Luddites is the last one.
Okay. Oh, that's right. So. Yeah. I was thinking, I think the last one is Linux Lugcast, isn't it?
Yeah. It goes Linux Luddites.
I was thinking, he just said that, so I was confused, but gotcha.
All right.
Okay, the last.
And the last piece of
feedback
is from Dowdle again.
I believe it concerned the ongoing System D.
I'm busting my chops over this System D brouhaha fiasco crap.
Fiasco crap. Well, actually, and I think he was mentioning that Launch D, which originally started off in Apple. Yeah, did you not look at the video?
No.
Okay. Well, I was already aware of the video, but I went ahead and listened to it again just because he had directed our attention to a particular spot.
Wait,
in the video.
Is this the video where
Montana Linux?
No.
Yeah.
Is this the video that's that FreeBSD from the FreeBSD talk?
That talks about.
Yeah, I saw that a long time ago.
Right, but you saw it before the emphasis on System D and Launch D, because his point in providing the video on that particular spot in the video,
the guy says that we
Launch D, right, and Launch D.
And he says in the video, though, he does say that System D sucks ass.
Oh, jeez. Tony, quick, the beeper.
Right.
All right. But anyway, so, well, he said that, but he may have said that. I don't recall that. I don't recall those words. Yeah, you probably were. But Launch D is Apple's version. I'll say version, but I mean, that's their approach to that whole boot up procedure.
Yes.
And they have, I'm going to say this loosely, they've released the code, or I mean, they have made the code available by some kind of license or something. It's out there, and they've taken it and done Open Launch D. And there's been some discussion. I'm going to ask Chris Moore from BSD Now. I'm going to send a question into the show because they talked about this on the BSD Now podcast, about these people moving to FreeBSD from Linux.
Right. Don't get me wrong. I agree.
You use it.
I agree. SysV in it needs to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
However, having said that, systemd is not.
Okay. But Launch D, the thinking here is that Launch D is eventually going to come into FreeBSD,
right,
as, as their boot up
yes,
process starting mechanism.
It's showing its age, mm-hmm. and it really needs to be replaced.
So.
But System D just tries to be too soon. It tries to be too many things that you need people. It's bad.
So actually, Apple released it under the Apache license. That's what they did. And I'm going to include a link to launchd.info in the show notes. So, for anyone who's interested.
All right.
Anyone who's got that free BSD itch. All right.
Thank you, Scott. You need extra work before you.
That's all right. No, but I think he raised a good point, and I'm going to send a question off to the other podcast and ask them about it, because if anybody would know where things are going in that direction, they probably would.
All right. I think that's all we had for.
That's it.
Feedback.
So
we have a little bit of stats though. Our downloads. We consistently get about 1,500 downloads over a 2-week period. For each show before the next one releases.
But unique repeats are only like 750.
Oh, that's a good question. Let me go and look.
That cron job I run.
download.
I got it part of System D. It just happens automatically now.
I did fire up. I have my my actual hardware server, which is what's running my website.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of that server is. Odin.
Okay.
And I recently spun up 3 of Atlantic.net VPSs,
mm-hmm.
named Thor, Vadir, and
Valkyrie,
Valbrummer or something like that.
Voldemort?
But they're Odin's kids. So I have access to 4 with all different IP addresses, so I could jump that node back 4 unique.
Oh, jeez.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that server's got 3 IPs on it, so I could theoretically do...
Yeah, but that would... Yeah, but we'd know it, and then it wouldn't... All right. Okay, so what do we...
All right.
I guess it's time for our...
So time for the...
Featured Music of the Week.
Music this week.
Yeah, the holiday. It's the holiday season.
Yep, holiday's
Solstice.
Coming up.
Hanukkah, Christmas, Yule.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite things...
I have a Santa hat that says that. I'm wearing it tonight.
One of my favorite things for music around Christmas is the bell choir. So, we have Jingle Bells played by a bell choir.
You got a Nine Inch Nails song played by a bell choir.
That would be funny.
All right.
So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 141.
Spiked eggnog.
Yeah. I still think it's redundant.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, see you next time.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I normally don't say anything at the end.
No.
I wasn't paying attention. I was trying to help Lua here and get...
I was trying to get the link for him, too. Did you get it already?
What was it?
I got it right here.
Okay, yeah, why don't you post it?
Starting. Now we're on broadcasting.
All right.
So we're starting a little bit late. We had some DNS issues, which is still resolving. Propagating, I suppose.
Resolving. Yeah.
For our butt.
Yeah, my butt is...
Broadcast using this tool. That's what that stands for, just to be clear.
Yeah, it points to the our domain, but a subdomain, live.smlr.us. And I moved to a new server this week, and actually last week, and I forgot to put the
forgot to change DNS. The A record.
Yeah.
Spiked eggnog.
That's got to be it.
No, episode name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Okay. All right. Are we ready to kick off?
Yeah. All right.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.
Hi folks, this is Chatter. K. Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.